I was in kindergarten when I brought a bucket of snakes to school for show and tell. It seemed like a good idea, right? I lived out in the backwoods of Maine, down at the end of a long dirt road, and, well, snakes were the most interesting thing I had to show and tell about. My mom had the sense that snakes on a school bus make about as much sense as snakes on a plane, and so she piled me and my brother and my snakes into the back of our old Volvo wagon that morning. I had them sort of this 5-gallon bucket on the floor between my legs, pushing down the snakes as they tried to see where we were going. And it was a good haul. It was a heavy bucket. My brother and I, we'd worked hard beating the bushes, wrestling all these garter snakes into a bucket. I don't believe that my mom had told my kindergarten teacher what I was bringing to school, though. And even though they were not poisonous, right, these were kind garter snakes. Well, I don't remember really anything about my kindergarten teacher, but I do remember that she was horrified. This was not a helpful thing to bring into my kindergarten classroom. It seems that most humans have had this tremendous fear of snakes for our whole history, as long as we have record. And these Israelites, you know, they've been pretty miserable wandering in their new freedom, and snakes don't really help matters. This is the fifth of 5 murmuring stories. These stories when they're grousing and grumbling and generally just complaining about how much better life was in slavery. But for the first 4, they're complaining to Moses and to Aaron, their exhausted leaders. This time, instead, they turn and complain against God. And to be honest, it sounds pretty whiny, right? Those of us who are in the zone of parenting this height, or maybe you remember that. You know, so they don't have any food. There is no food. And at the same time, they detest this miserable food. Right? Do you not have any food, or is it awful? Right? You got to pick one. It's familiar. But really, you know, down underneath the whining, I think it's actually that these people are really afraid. They're afraid that their new life, it's not going to be enough. They're afraid that this new life will not be good enough. They're afraid of their freedom. But as it turns out, complaining against God is apparently worse than complaining against their tired leaders, and so now they have snakes. And we may not agree that God is the vengeful sort who would punish people with snakes. That's not the God that I know. All right, that's not the God that we celebrate here, but this is how these people in this time made sense of their experience. And I think that it can be worthwhile to unpack these stories of God's wrath and wrestle with them. But in this case, I think it's actually a red herring. I think that what follows the snakes is actually what's most important. Because what comes next is that these people see what they have done wrong. They realize how they have separated themselves from God. And they come forward and they ask for help. would happen if we looked directly at our fear? What would change if we turned and faced our sin and named it and asked for help? I was talking with a friend not too long ago when she shared about a time when she had really screwed up. It was a couple of years ago now. It was long enough ago that she had the perspective that only distance can offer, right? The kind of understanding our life backwards while we live it forwards that Phil just preached about. She talked to me about how she'd really hurt someone she loved. And she told me about the burn that followed. That was how she named it, as this heat that was carried into her body, the shame coursing like venom in her veins. And as I listened to her, it sounded an awful lot like these snakes the Israelites encounter. We hear them as poisonous serpents in our translation, but the Hebrew talks about them as fiery serpents or seraphs. And that was how my friend experienced the consequence of her sin. It was the fiery bite that came from the inside out. It surprised even my friend, but she decided to ask for the rite of reconciliation. That's what we call private confession in the Episcopal Church. And it terrified her. Right? The idea of getting up and looking another human being in the eyes and saying out loud what it is that you've done wrong, how you've hurt another person. And I think it's understandable that we are so reluctant to do this. It is terrifying, and it's also been used as a tool, abused as a tool of obligation for so long, rather than offered as a pathway to healing. It's a terribly vulnerable thing. It requires such immense trust. Maybe you wonder, will this person see me differently? Will they treat me as less if they know? She was right to feel afraid. But she went. She came to a place much like this. And she lifted up her eyes. And she told another person what she had done, how she had hurt this person she loved, how it had gone so wrong. She told me that when she left, this hot shame that she had been feeling, she had the sense that it had cooled and dissipated. She felt like she could breathe again, like she could straighten up, having set down this burden with another person. It wasn't magic, right? She still had plenty of work to do to deal with what had been. But it felt like she could live again. Moses' snake, that bronze serpent on a pole, it is not magic. All right, people get confused, and some 500 years down the line, King Hezekiah will have to come and break this bronze serpent in half because people come to see it as an idol. They get confused and start worshiping the bronze snake, thinking that it can magically heal them. But that's not how it works. It's not magic. It's a reminder to return to God. That's how these things ought to function, as reminders to return. We receive such a strange metaphor in our gospel today, right? We have Jesus being lifted up, presumably at his crucifixion, held alongside Moses' snake on a pole. It's confusing. But the cross isn't magic either. It's two beams of wood that were feared and abhorred. It killed just as the snakes killed, and it brings life just as the snake did. But it's not magic. It works because it offers this call, this reminder. It begs us to come into reconciliation with one another and with God. What would happen if we faced our fear directly? What would change if we looked at our sin and named it with another? What I'm hoping for here, actually, is that we all might gather these buckets of snakes. I think that's what we need to do. It sounds ridiculous, but the fear, right? It has a hold on us. But the invitation here, it starts in love, in God so loving the world so very much. That's our starting place. And the love and the fear, they're right alongside each other. The love is this place where we can actually take stock of the paralyzing fear. And not just that, but look at the sin that is so often entwined with the fear. What if we took these buckets and brought the fear and the sin, the brokenness, the way we hurt others, and put it in, contained, maybe still writhing, and yet open, and brought it to another human being? Say, look, this is where I've been, and help. My kindergarten teacher was not ready for that, literally or otherwise, but people are. That's the thing, right? My friend's priest, she was ready for this. People in the faith, your friends here in the faith, are ready for that. This is what we do together. This is how we are called to be and to trust together. So what would happen if we looked directly at our fear? If we named our sin and said, help. This is the way to healing.